One of our greatest heroes in the United States is often remembered with a four-word phrase. He freed the slaves is often the very first thing we hear about Abraham Lincoln when we're kids. So why are we still talking about slavery 151 years after the Civil War ended? Well, because the practice continues today in many parts of the world. Our first guests on this Thursday are involved in working to end slavery and human trafficking. Kate Case is with the International Justice Mission and is visiting the Rogue Valley from California. Kate, good to have you here.
Good morning. Thank you.
And we have with us as well Caleb LaPlante, who lives in the Rogue Valley. He's the Oregon State Coordinator for Rotarians Against Child Slavery. So thank you for joining us, Caleb.
Thanks for having us.
So let's hear first about your organizations, and why don't we start with you, Caleb?
Well, and Jeff, as you mentioned, I'm a member of a local Rotary Club, the Greater Grants Pass Rotary Club. And Rotary is over 100 years old. We have clubs in all parts of the world. We have over a million members. Our motto is service above self. And so most clubs meet weekly for a meal and fellowship, and then we do service work. So Rotarians Against Child Slavery is a structure underneath Rotary International that particularly focuses on commercial exploitation, particularly of children around the world in all forms, whether it be sexual exploitation or forced labor exploitation. We do service projects internationally, and we also do them domestically. We just did a project in partnership with three other local Rotary clubs, including the Asheville and Lithia Springs Club, this last January, related to sex trafficking in America. So that's a little bit about Rotarians Against Child Slavery.
Is it largely a child problem around the world? I can imagine it'd be somewhat difficult to obtain statistics because it's not like anybody admits, oh, yeah, I got lots of slaves, you know. So I imagine the numbers themselves would be hard to track. But is it primarily a child issue, or does it extend to all ages?
I'll leave that one to Kate. And, you know, we're primarily awareness-driven and policy action kind of folks. So I wouldn't have a number for you on it. But my feeling is, having been around this issue for over 4 years, that it's certainly a significant portion of it. It's not a small minority where you have children being exploited. And it's all about vulnerabilities, and children are additionally more vulnerable than an adult. And so I think whatever proportion it is of child victims, it's because of those vulnerabilities that they're there.
Okay. Kate, why don't you tell us about International Justice Mission and what you do there?
Absolutely. So International Justice Mission is the largest international anti-trafficking agency in the world. And what we do is we partner with local authorities to rescue victims, to prosecute those who are taking advantage of them, to restore survivors, and ultimately to strengthen these public justice systems around the world. So, for example, IJM last year in 2015 worked with partners to rescue over 4,100 victims around the world, and that includes both children and adults.
And what do you do for them? Where do they go when you can get them out of bondage?
So we partner with local aftercare providers on the ground. Something to note is that 95% of our staff are actually nationals on the ground in those communities. And we will partner then with local aftercare homes and services. Restoration looks very different depending on the type of slavery or trafficking that a person has been involved with.
Let's get some terminology first. I mean, slavery and trafficking, essentially the same thing. Either way, we're talking about people who are forced to do things they would rather not do otherwise, right?
Absolutely. So the only difference in defining trafficking versus slavery is that with trafficking, there actually has to be movement from one space to another. Not necessarily crossing borders, but you would have to move a person. Whereas slavery, you can be enslaved in your own community, specifically throughout India where we work, that's something that is seen with bonded labor slavery. So that's really the only differentiation.
You know, and I'd like to think it's just, maybe a few people here and a few people there. But since you mentioned India, I did have a chance to look at some news recently. There was a major bust in India just this month at a factory with somewhere north of 500 different people who were pulled in.
That's right. Yeah, we just conducted a rescue operation with over 550 individuals.
Wow, that's pretty shocking. And what were the circumstances? They were being forced to work at a factory against their will, or for very low money or no money?
Yeah, you know, what is typically the situation with bonded labor is that there is a small debt that is incurred, and maybe that is because your child is sick or something of that nature. And then what will happen is a member in the community who has power, who has more money, will say, hey, I'll give you a small loan. Say it's $50 in exchange for you working for me for the day or for a week or whatever the given period is. And then after that period of time goes by, you actually have accrued more debt. And so instead of owing $50, you now actually owe the person 100, and yet you've done all of this work. And so then by use of power of that person in that community, you actually stay indebted and in bonded labor. And so those living circumstances typically are 12 to 14 hour days every day of the week, regardless of if you're sick or not. It's something that then the whole family is in bondage, and you actually grow up. There are children that we have rescued who have grown up, generations who have been in bonded labor.
Do we have any numbers on approximately how many people are either in slavery or in human trafficking around the world?
So the most updated number is over 30 million people in the world are enslaved, and that comes from the Global Slavery Index, which actually says 35.8 million is what their number is. That same organization, the Global Slavery Index, actually indicated 27 million several years ago, and that was where the common number came from, of 27 million. And since, with more measurement, it has been updated to just under 36 million.
Slavery and human trafficking, the subject matter here on the Jefferson Exchange. Kate Case is with International Justice Mission. Caleb LaPlante is the Oregon State Coordinator for Rotarians Against Child Slavery. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. Your questions and comments and suggestions are welcome. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. There are some efforts that I've had a chance to look at. For one thing, you've got a Senate bill. It looks like U.S. Senate Bill 553. And you've managed to enlist the help of at least one Oregon Senator, Caleb LaPlante.
That's right. And more recently, a month ago or so, our second senator came on board. So we have both of our U.S. officials at the in the Senate anyway, sponsoring this bill. I'll let Case talk a little. Kate. I'm now referring to you as your last name. I'll let her talk about the bill a little bit more, but it was really pretty exciting, this Rotary project we did in January, how it was a leverage point. We were already working with the local representatives for both offices, and when Kate came here in January to be a guest speaker to local leaders, we thought, well, why don't we just see what we can't put together there in terms of a meeting, and we drove up to Portland and met with their Portland reps, and shortly thereafter, Senator Merkley produced a video. You can see it on IJM's website and social media. And it was his video endorsement of the bill and his sponsorship. He added his name. And then it was just a matter of time. It was just a month and a half later that we were able to also work with Senator Wyden's office, and they're on board as well. I'll let Kate talk about the semantics of the bill and what it is.
Okay. So tell us about 553, Senate 553, and what it's supposed to do. It's been it was introduced a year ago, wasn't it?
It was introduced a year ago in February of last year by Senator Corker, who's the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. And so that bill was introduced in response to several advocates around the United States, specifically in this case in Tennessee, who asked their senator to do something about trafficking, something that was a game changer. There have been several bills that have been introduced in Congress and have gone through. And what Senator Corker wanted to do was he wanted to really put forth a bill that changes the game in the fight against trafficking, very similar to when President George W. Bush was in office and he issued PEPFAR, the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, what that did for AIDS is what we are hoping this bill will do for ending slavery and trafficking around the world.
Well, when we talk about it around the world, let's get a fix on how common it might still be closer to our part of the world. I mean, does it still happen in North America? Does it still happen in the United States? Does it happen in Oregon and California, Caleb LaPlante?
Well, and prior to my Rotary Club really picking up this work, I worked with an organization and still do, actually. I'm the outreach coordinator for ACT Southern Oregon, which stands for Abolish Child Trafficking. Mm-hmm. So up until about 2 years ago, the first 2 years back to about 2011, we worked on sex trafficking in America and in Oregon in particular. There is labor trafficking, and there are advocates working in that field, but that was our specialty, and so that's what I can speak to. So I know that in Oregon we have youth commonly thought of in Portland, and definitely they're there, but also in all other parts of the state, including our own, who are commercially exploited for sex. They find themselves lured and groomed by usually older men who say all sorts of things, promise them their hopes and dreams, and have cash resources to kind of wow them. And then there's a turning point there where they're forced into sexual servitude of sorts, and it's really hard to get back out. So that's where we've worked, and I can speak personally to knowing that exists in our own state and our own communities.
How widespread, and it's not just an urban problem, from what you're saying, then. It's not just a Portland thing.
Yeah, and there has been so much awareness on this issue lately in Southern Oregon, largely in part to this public awareness campaign that our Rotary Clubs did. And I've heard so many people saying, well, now we understand it's this huge problem. And I think there's a course correction that needs to happen there. I wouldn't say we're talking about a huge problem in Oregon. This is not something we need to all take up pitchforks on and feel like we're being invaded by traffickers. But it is a significant enough problem where we have to pay attention. And it's a gruesome of enough thing that if someone falls victim to sex trafficking anyway, whether it be in prostitution or pornography or stripping, we really don't want that person there. I think we could say confidently, boy, whatever it took to keep you from that, we would have preferred we would have done that. And so that's where we need to be focusing on, is whatever the victim population is now, we need to be understanding that better and learning how to prevent that better.
Caleb LaPlante is with Rotarians Against Child Slavery. He's the Oregon State Coordinator for that. Kate Case is with International Justice Mission. We're talking about slavery and human trafficking here on The Exchange. Feel free to join our discussion, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Is it often, I mean, it sounds, Kate Case, like this is an economic situation for the oppressor, that it is a chance for them to make some pretty easy money off of somebody else's labor, which is kind of the definition of slavery, I guess. But it sounds like that equation has not changed through the millennia during which we've been dealing with this issue.
Certainly, that is where our mind first goes to, is that it is an economic issue, and you're right in that the traffickers do receive an economic benefit. What we have found at IJM is that it is a rule of law issue. It is the fact that public justice systems are not working for the poor, not working for those who they are supposed to protect. And so when that happens, when there is just no law enforcement, you see trafficking increase significantly. So what IJM has found in our work over the past almost 20 years is that when we go in and we work with the public justice system, so we work to train police and judges and work with the whole system, we see that there's this dramatic shift. One very quick example of that is a project that we had the opportunity to conduct in conjunction with the Gates Foundation. And so the Gates Foundation loved our model, wanted to see if it actually worked in eradicating slavery in a particular community. And so we chose Cebu, which is the second largest metropolitan area in the Philippines. And we did a baseline study to see how prevalent trafficking was in Cebu. And after we did that baseline study, we then were given a few years to work with police, work with judges, help prep attorneys on these cases. And what we found is that 4 years later, when these outside researchers came in again, we found a 79% reduction in the availability of these little kids for sale, simply because we were walking cases through the public justice system. And what we found is that bad guys aren't courageous, right? These traffickers are not actually courageous people. They're doing this out of opportunity, out of the fact that law enforcement is not actually doing their job. And so when law enforcement does do this, it just changes the entire game.
Which raises the question, if it's entirely about law enforcement either looking the other way or just not being particularly active in it, or if in some cases it's deficiencies of laws themselves. If there's some places where there's enough of a gray zone between slavery and what is legal that people say, I'm just doing what the law allows me to do?
So we see that there are actually laws against slavery in every single country, and the question is more about law enforcement rather than the laws themselves.
All right. We have a phone call. Here's Mark in Redding. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking slavery and trafficking with Kate Case and Caleb LaPlante.
Morning.
Hi.
Just recently in Shasta County, a couple was convicted of human trafficking, amongst other charges, for putting young women into prostitution. It was like within the last 2 months.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember what
I don't know the details of it. I tried to avoid reading about it extensively because it was just kind of awful. But, it's just obvious that these things are still going on, right here in our own River City,
Indeed. Okay, thanks for that, Mark. Appreciate that. Caleb, can you speak to the prevalence in our part of the world?
Well, I can say this, that the I-5 corridor, which Redding is on and we are on, Portland and Seattle, L.A., San Francisco, well, no, not really, but it's in a corridor, so to speak. That West Coast, the I-5 corridor is referred to by the FBI as the West Coast Kitty Track, meaning kids. So if it has a name like that, then there's a reason. And so that doesn't just mean kids are moved along I-5, but they have identified it's enough of a problem that they need to be watching it and trying to coordinate between various points along that transit route to be able to discover where this is happening and then stop it. So it doesn't surprise me that happens in Reading. And I would also say that, you know, if there's something in the news, that usually means that there's several others that didn't make the news around it. But thankfully, there is a point where they were able to get it out into the light where people can start learning about the issues. I'm glad to hear that.
I understood Mark's reaction where he was saying it was something he didn't particularly want to read about, but there it is in the news. And I wonder how tricky it is to get the word out and help people understand what's going on. I know there was you mentioned Kate's visit to the Rogue Valley in January, which involved an awareness campaign and some displays that traveled around the region as well. I mean, is this not the kind of thing that people flock to willingly, I would imagine, Kate?
You know, it's not. But what we have found is that, excuse me, there is a story of hope. There is a story of good news, of transformation that can happen when people come together and learn about this issue and then act. And I think that that's what is so beautiful about this story is that, yes, there's something that is horrible and horrific, but I think it's our duty as citizens and of people who care about these sorts of issues to actually act, to get involved and to do something, whatever it is that we can, whether we are lawyers, whether we are students, whatever it is that we are, we have the opportunity to act.
And what are some of the prime things that people can do then?
Well, and we've been very active through Rotary, and I would say that's an opportunity for people to serve. Community leaders are people who find themselves in Rotary, but if you don't necessarily think, well, geez, why would I join Rotary? This might be it. If you're looking for an opportunity to serve, we have some momentum going locally in our clubs on this, and that's not just in domestic situations. We're working on some international service projects as well, and so... So I'd say that's a good place to get started. You know, come visit one of your clubs and learn about what our area is doing in regard to anti-slavery efforts in Rotary.
We'll take a couple more minutes to talk about an important subject, slavery and human trafficking, with Caleb LaPlante, who's the Oregon State Coordinator of Rotarians Against Child Slavery. Kate Case is with International Justice Mission. You can join us on The Exchange at 800-838-3760 over the phone. Send your emails to jx@jeffnet.org. What do we know about penalties for enslaving people or for human trafficking versus, for example, kidnapping, which might be a one-time thing versus this ongoing thing? Is it a much stiffer? I mean, I guess what I'm asking is if the sticks are getting larger than the carrots over time.
Well, I'll say that domestically, Kate made a comment about how the laws are there, but it's law enforcement that's needing attention. Our very laws here in Oregon, I can say, have needed attention as well. In 2013, we passed a bill called Senate Bill 673 that made it a felony to purchase sex from a minor. It was previously only a misdemeanor, as hard as that is to believe. And that's a significant step in the right direction. We've been looking at hearsay exemption for trafficking victims. There's some other things that have come out in subsequent sessions and more that are coming up. So there's always work to be done there.
What are the ways in which perhaps the money incentive can be removed? It seems like here again, if it weren't lucrative, people probably wouldn't do it. So, I mean, what are the ways in which you can go after people who engage in slavery and human trafficking, Kate, to remove any financial incentive from it?
Yeah, so because our organization works on law enforcement, that is our angle. But there are a couple of really great groups that are working on the economic incentive. So a researcher, Siddharth Kara, who is the lead of Harvard's program against trafficking, has done the majority of his research on the economics of trafficking, both sex trafficking and labor trafficking, and just trying to identify what the price point is where it's no longer profitable to traffic individuals. What we have found in our work is even without removing that sort of economic incentive, if you actually prosecute an individual, that sends a message to the entire community that this is no longer profitable. Even if it is a short sentence, which is often how it starts out, is a very short sentence that then is beefed up over time with further prosecutions.
Are there situations in which people don't even recognize the situation they've been trapped in as slavery? I mean, are there times when they just think, oh, I just owe this person money, and therefore I have to continue working here, which by definition, your definition is slavery, isn't it?
Yeah, and so with bonded labor, that can be the case. If you have been born into a brick kiln or a rice quarry, and that is all that you have known, is that you are a property of another human being, if that's just your frame of reference, then yes, you wouldn't know that you were enslaved. I think that you would be very aware that in some ways you are being taken advantage of if you are working 14 hours a day, if your family is doing the same and you have nothing else. And so yes and no is the answer.
And go ahead, Caleb.
Well, and I've talked a lot in your questions to me. I've talked a lot about sex trafficking in our state and country. And I mentioned earlier that our group ACT Southern Oregon has only worked in that sphere, but others are working on labor trafficking in America. Here in Ashland, Attorney Faith Morse is the Oregonians Against Trafficking Humans regional coordinator. And I know she's particularly passionate about making sure that our agricultural industries are not exploiting individuals. You also have, very interestingly, especially in large cities where people are brought in, either domestic or foreign victims, and they're forced to work in homes for prominent individuals, wealthy or prominent individuals. And sometimes they go years before they're discovered that they're there against their will and have no ability to leave. We hear more and more of those stories in incredible and large media sources reporting those. So labor trafficking exists in America, probably not as prevalently as sexual exploitation, but it's there, and it's something to be concerned about.
This doesn't necessarily sound like the kind of thing that law enforcement would necessarily be called out there about. It would be people involved with labor laws and issues like that. Is that the case?
Possibly. It's not my specialty. I haven't spent time there. I would say that it's a matter of education for law enforcement. If they're not sure that this is happening or it's a crime in and of itself, that's got to happen. Training.
And if this is something that listeners are interested in learning more about, Coalition of Immokalee Workers, CIW, is one of the leading organizations.
Started with citrus workers in Florida, right?
Started with tomato pickers in Florida. And they actually have worked to get 7 federally prosecuted crimes about labor trafficking. And yes, it all started with tomatoes.
And so what can people do? I mean, if they just got an urge to do something today, what's a good first step?
So for IJM, our first step is always to point you to our website where we have a variety of resources, and that website is www.ijm.org. And there you can plug in a button or you can click a button called Get Engaged, and there are a variety of different ways. In Oregon, we are so privileged to have both senators who have already co-sponsored the End Modern Slavery Initiative. They're joining over 30 other senators from both sides of the aisle on this bill. But if you're in California, that's my home state, we still are working to get Senator Boxer on board. So I would say reach out to your local Congress people, but first come to our website.
Do you have Senator Feinstein already?
We do.
Okay. So International Justice Mission, IJM.org. And Caleb, where can people get a hold of Rotarians Against Child Slavery?
Our website, you can just Google Rotarians Against Child Slavery and then contact any local Rotary Club. They can point you toward the people working on this in the Rotary community here.
Okay. Important issue. Not fun to talk about, but something we need to do. Caleb LaPlante from Rotarians Against Child Slavery. Kate Case from International Justice Mission, thank you both so much.
Thanks, Jeffrey.
Thank you.